My name's Martin Woodward. We're going to have a chat about being agile across technology borders. So I'm an Eclipse developer inside Microsoft, so I have a little bit of experience on this topic, and then hopefully we can go through, have some fun, and show you some shiny demos, that sort of thing. So, first of all, anyone who knows me knows I'm a fairly informal chap. That's what I look like, in case you forget. I'm a fairly informal chap, so just shout if there's any questions as we go through. We'll still finish on time, don't worry. But if there's anything you want to ask that, you know, now's not the appropriate time, then that's how to get hold of me. They're one of those means. I put that up again at the end. Okay. So this is the product I work on. I work on Team Foundation Server. And I also work on Team Explorer Everywhere. That's the cross-platform client for Team Foundation Server. We're going to dig into that some more. I also wrote a couple of books. Not that makes me an expert or anything. I'm just a shameless plug, really. But there you go. Okay. As you may be tell from my accent, I'm not from round here. I live in Northern Ireland. In a place called just north of Belfast. I work remotely. So my talk today isn't about the challenges of a distributed, technology-mixed, remote team, agile, but we'll have some of that thrown in, no doubt. I work on my own. That's the view from my front doorstep. There's a reason why it's so green in Ireland, in case you haven't noticed. So, yeah, it's a beautiful part of the world. Not a lot of people around me, which is probably why I overcompensate and like coming to conferences like this, just so I can see humans for a change, rather than cows and sheep and toddlers. So, yeah, that's the view. I do have a desk. That's the office in Belfast, that little building next to the warship. So I sit in the corner down there. That hole you see up there, that's where they built the Titanic. Don't let that worry you. It was fine when we last touched it, honestly. But, those are the famous cranes. Yeah, so as you can tell, I prefer where I live than where my office is, so I tend to just stay there and work remotely from home. The commute's a bit better. The team where I work, most of them are based in North Carolina. That's where half of the Team Foundation Server team live, is in North Carolina. So I telecommute to there every day. And then just to make it extra interesting, to add a few more hours time zone, I also, the rest of the team, all work here in Redmond, so keeps me busy. And Team Foundation Server was developed like this, so there's a reason why it works really well over wide area networks and over VPN connections and things, because the team that built it, you know, our server lives in Building 42, which is just down the road, and so, you know, there's a reason why it works well in that way, because I have to do it all every day. Okay, so the problem I find, I've always sort of straddled the gap, you know, the divide between .NET and Java through most of my career. And the problem I've always found is that the customer rarely has a problem that only affects one technology area, you know? I used to work for an airline, did a website for an airline, and we needed to sell holidays. You know, people want to buy a holiday, they just don't want tickets. And more people want a la carte holidays. You know, they don't just want to go to a thing and buy a prepackaged holiday. They want to pick the flights, they want to pick the destinations, pick hire car, pick hotels and things. And that was a great opportunity for us as an airline, because we can now upsell all these other services to people while they're buying flights. Brilliant. However, the flight selling system, that was built in like assembler on the mainframe. You know, this is like highly optimized in 1961 and nobody's touched it ever since. It works. You know, crashes on that are not acceptable. So, yeah, we just leave it alone, really. And then the website, that particular website at the time was built in an early, it sort of predated J2EE, so it was an early sort of Java technologies. And then, you know, the AirMile system was on a PC, on a SQL Server database on a PC. The hotel booking system was on some other system somewhere. A customer just wants a holiday. They don't want to go to all these different systems and book things. They want a holiday. And so you have to track the story, or the epic, whatever, of I would like a holiday across all these technology areas. As we all know, you specialise on tools as developers. You get good, you pick up a technology to do something, you get good at it, you then become more productive in it. You know, you just naturally, the more you practice, the more you specialise on a technology stack. And you get, sort of technical specialties, so much so that, again, back when I used to have a proper job, when I was a consultant, we were in what we called expert teams. You know, we had the Java expert team and the .NET expert team, and we were spread across verticals. So for a particular vertical, you know, we'd pick one or other. And it kind of was a bit of a lottery as to which expert team a new project came to. And whichever one it went in, you could guarantee that the solution that was proposed was in that particular technology stack. You know, they could do the job they needed to do for this particular thing. We were already productive in that technology, so we just did it in that stack. However, in these stovepipes of developer specialty, you'll develop the tooling that you adopt. And tooling adoption tends to be, or has historically been, quite organic. So the developers would, you know, choose, hey, cool, this new product looks good, let's go use that one. And, oh, I don't like that IDE, you know, it's too big, I want to use the shiny new IDE. And it was, you know, I worked on teams where, and this was, you know, quite common in Java teams at the time, where you couldn't even, like, even within the team of five people, we couldn't agree on an IDE to standardize on. Somebody would be using IntelliJ, somebody would be using Eclipse, somebody would be using NetBeans, and crazy stuff. So you all have these tools that are all in little areas, and all the information gets trapped. It's really hard to tell where you are. Can we buy a holiday yet? Are we 80% done? Probably, yeah, you know. And managing dependencies between those teams is tricky as well. You end up, because you're getting into these stovepipe specialities, you end up managing it by building contracts between the teams, and very early on defining a contract that you agree on. This is how we're going to do it. And, you know, this is how waterfall happens, because of these type of things. And it's just crazy. So that's the problem. So how do we fix it? We've got some cute new stock art in the new Metro style PowerPoint slides. Not quite like that. There we go. How do we fix it? So it's easy when you say it, but you've got to try and develop a team across teams. Develop some collective ownership of the problem. You've got to have everyone focused around, we have to sell a flight. It's just like inside a small team. You know, if you have specialities in a team, you might have people who are better at, say, the ASP.NET front-end work. Some people are better at doing back-end work inside a small team. Some people are better at testing, whatever. However, when the person who normally does ASP.NET front-end work is overloaded, then, you know, you share tasks around, and somebody picks up a task and does a bit of ASP network for them and does that and works on the requirements together. So you've got to share ownership. It's difficult to share over the code, but you can certainly share it over the requirements, over the stories. But how do you, it's all very well saying you've got to do it. How do you do that? Well, encouraging them, but also having a common, clear set of goals. One of the things I've personally found, and just to give you a couple of examples, actually, in the collective ownership, in TFS 11, and I'm going to show you some of that stuff later, we wanted to add a couple of features. One of them was the epic was named Local Workspaces, but actually it should have been get rid of the read-only bit. You know, we wanted to get rid of that read-only bit. That involved work from the server team, who work on the version control server. It also involved work from the client team inside Visual Studio and the client team that I work on in Eclipse and cross-platform. And we had to, you know, monitor that as we went through. So we'll talk about that in a minute a bit more. One thing that we found very early on that you need to do is everybody needs to march in time. If you have more than one team working on something, if you're running Scrum or an iterative methodology, then synchronize your sprints across team. You just have to. Otherwise, it gets offset as to when things are going to be, you know, when things are ready. Originally, we tried kind of offsetting it deliberately so that we could kind of know when, you know, we could finish one sprint and say, oh, yeah, this is ready, then let's carry on. It just didn't work. It worked a lot better when everyone was on synchronous sprints because it's very rare that your dependencies are just a nice line. Dependencies tend to get cyclical quite quickly. And so if everybody's on synchronized sprints, it just makes it a lot easier. Of course, this is where some of the lean thinking and, you know, some of those sorts of thinking can really... it gives some hope for being able to do it, you know, in condensed... I always think of, like, lean as sort of... I'm a physicist, so, you know, it's shrinking the iterations closer and closer and closer until there's no, you know, you're no planning and you're just doing it all continuously. And by doing the whole, you know, Kanban and tracking work in progress and moving cards from one to the other, you can try and do things on a pull basis. But we use Scrum. That's what I know most about, and we synchronize sprints. So, and that's, I find that invaluable. Oops, warn me about that. There we go. So, the single most important thing you can do is have a single source of the truth. I don't care if that truth is stored in TFS particularly. I mean, I get paid for it if it is, but you know, that's obviously nice. It could be on a whiteboard, it could be on a spreadsheet, it could be on sticky notes. I don't care. There needs to be one source of truth that everybody's referring to as to, is it done yet? What are we working on? What's the top priority? You need that to nurture the collective ownership. You just have to all agree on where we are and what we're doing. It's also the basis, the single source of truth, is what you use to help communicate between teams. And as we all know with any agile process, you know, communication is key. That's why one of the reasons why agile is successful, because it encourages communication. So having the single source of truth, you all agree on what your requirements are, if you want to call them that, what your stories, product backlog items, epics are. We all use the same methodology to track our truth. We all use a Scrum-based template to do that because, again, we find it easier to roll up. So we'd have an epic to track, you know, get rid of the read-only bit, and then lots of stories that are children of that, potentially, and we can track when the whole epic's complete. Or often, I'm a product backlog owner for my particular area, and I have the stories on my product backlog when I know I need to do them. I need to go implement the client. And I just stick them on the backlog as soon as I know that they need done. But I mark them as, you know, not yet ready for action. And coming up to the sprint boundary, so we tend to do our sprint boundaries on a Wednesday so that you've got some time beforehand to get prepared for it as a product backlog owner and some time, you know, sort of just a bit after. And coming up to the sprint boundary, we'd all chat between the teams, you know, and say, hey, you know, you were going to be, this one was on your, you committed to this, you know, in the sprint. How have you got on? Is it done? And that's where you find that actually, yeah, it's kind of been done, but we kind of changed it a little bit to make it happen. You know, can we can you change how you work? Oh, yeah, no problem, because we haven't started on it yet and we haven't agreed some crazy contract. We just go away and do it. The thing about the common goals, again, by having a single source of truth, is you really start to find that you're balancing out work between teams more. That you, you know, when you come to actually implement the story, I'm trying to think of the example. We had a customer support issue come in actually today, and it needed a fix. I was supposed to meet a gentleman who's here, probably in the room today, and I didn't because I was doing this customer thing. It needed a fix doing. We wanted to turn it around quite quickly for the customer. The server team are busy doing and it was a fix that could be done either in the client or the server. The server team are busy doing a feature that we really want them to do, so we'll fix it in the client because we know we can do that, turn it around quick and ship it. We didn't shirk the responsibility because the responsibility is, you know, keeping the customer happy, fixing the bug, fixing the story. So you've got to, establishing that collective ownership can be the hard thing, breaking down those, you know, me and us, and the single source of truth is the only way I know of doing that. Okay. Now, one of the things I wanted to make sure we covered is some gotchas. If you're doing cross-platform work, and there'll be some groans from some people who recognize, this is the top one, but if you're doing work between file systems, regardless of the source control system, and I've been trying to keep this all generic as to, you know, this can be implemented in any system, doesn't have to be TFS, can be anything. Regardless of the source control system, if you are having code that can be on different operating systems, then you have to go to a low common denominator between those to be able to share files between file systems. So some of these things are enforced by a TFS. So one of the classics is obviously a path length needs to be... if you get your path length greater than 260 characters, it causes problems on Windows. With .NET APIs, they all assume that. Some old Win32 APIs do. There are ways of hacking around it in newer Windows APIs, but path length is greater than 260 characters. Things start to break in ways you don't expect. For example, Ant on the Java side will actually just ignore the file that's there and kind of not tell you and not throw an error and not break the build. Quick story. Before Team Explorer Everywhere shipped, we had to have a code name. I've never told this story publicly, actually, so this is getting recorded. Fantastic. Before Team Explorer Everywhere shipped publicly, Mary Jo Foley can have this one now. The code name was Team Explorer Eaglestone. Oh, it was just Eagle. Yeah, Team Explorer Eaglestone. And, you know, we had to come up with reasons for why we picked Eaglestone internally. There's, obviously, with Microsoft, there's a standard for code names, believe it or not. Usually the standard is the cooler the code name, the worse the product name. But anyway, so I picked one that wasn't too cool. But we picked Eaglestone and, you know, justifying why it was. And I said internally, oh, it's because Eaglestone is a place, again, an essential requirement of a code name, near where Alan Turing did all his work during World War II at Bletchley Park. And, you know, I wanted to commemorate a famous British computer scientist. And, you know, I got a checkbox. A perfectly good code name. Actually, the reason was it began with an E because I wanted the acronym to be TEE, the final product, because I knew it was going to be Team Explorer Everywhere. I didn't want to have to change lots of build scripts, so I wanted to keep it TEE. I also wanted it to be exactly the same length as Everywhere, because we'd had loads of problems in the build with files getting missed out because we'd gone over this 260 character path limit. So, yeah. So that's why it's called Eaglestone. So, yeah. Another problem is README versus README. So case sensitivity. Now, all modern file systems are case sensitive, case preserving. So they keep the case you give that file initially. But on, say, most Linux file systems, you can have README all uppercase and README lowercase in the same directory, just great, just works. Try doing that on the Mac, not so much. Try doing that on Windows, doesn't work either. It's the same file as far as Mac and Windows are concerned. Try creating a file called con.txt in Windows, you're not allowed, you know? So don't go checking in a file called con or something like that. And then there's also funny characters, which always cause people problems. You know, some of these are allowed on some, and some of these aren't. Like backslash and space always cause problems, because on, you know, on lots of, you know, shells, the backslash character is interpreted as an escape. And so, you know, you don't use that one in file names, because otherwise you have to double escape it and stuff like that. And then we handle resource forks quite well in Team Explorer Everywhere, but some systems fall over on resource forks, which is an old Mac thing, but, you know, some customers use it still. And agree on a line ending, Windows or Linux, for files, for, like, shell scripts and stuff. Normally Linux, Unix line endings. Okay. So some takeaway gotchas. Right, then. Keep pressing the wrong button. There we go. Okay. What I wanted to show you now was, it's all very well saying, I want a single source of truth, blah, blah, blah. But what if my developers can't access it, you know? And for some reason, people are often don't believe that the Unix, Linux, and Mac integration for Team Foundation Server from Microsoft is going to be full-featured or useful. You know, there's often quite a bit of suspicion from the developers who aren't on the Microsoft platform if it's going to be any good for them or any useful or not. So if you'll bear with me, I wanted to show you some of the Team Explorer Everywhere stuff and how that enables you to have a single source of truth for your work item tracking data and your source control and your builds. Okay. So the first thing I wanted to show you, this is actually Chrome on the Mac, but it works just as well as in Safari. Have you seen the new web access in Team Foundation Server? Who's got access to the Team Foundation Service preview? Okay. So this is my preview account. I got it early, so I grabbed Martin really quick. So yeah. But so this is it. This is what it looks like today. May look different in a few days, I don't know. And if you come up here, you know, all the keyboard shortcuts still work and everything. It just works in Chrome, Firefox, Safari on the Mac, as well as browsers on Windows and Linux, and we test it all. So much so, we actually had a P1 stop the presses bug a couple of weeks ago that we turned around a fix for on hosted within a few hours, because the SSL certificate on the site stopped working on Firefox on Ubuntu Linux only. And it was to do with the way we'd signed it or something. P1 bug, we re-signed all our certificates, reissued them, got them up on the site and turned around, and it now worked in Firefox on Ubuntu Linux. It still worked fine on the Mac, it still worked fine on Windows. So, yeah, they take it seriously, which is cool. Mainly because we also all use this internally in the team for doing our stuff, so, you know, we notice, because that's where our stuff's stored. So, I wanted to show you that quickly. Now let's show you clips. Here's my little cheat sheet, make sure I don't forget anything. Because we had a couple of questions this morning, so I wanted to make sure I covered some of the key points people have been asking me about today. Okay, this is Eclipse on the Mac. A bit Spartan. If I come in here, I've got, you know, I like Hello World projects as demo projects, not because I'm lazy, just because it avoids me having to spend half an hour explaining what the project is. But I am a Java developer, so I've done the most complicated Hello World project I could imagine. So, I come in here, and there's me app.java and whatever. It's good. So the first thing I want to do is I'm managing that locally. Everything's great. I want to share this with my team. So I just come in here. Notice, even though I've got Team Explorer Everywhere installed in Eclipse, we've not done anything crazy like change the icon to be, you know, Visual Studio, or put any annoying buttons here, or put any tool, you know, overtaken the toolbars or anything. It's just Eclipse until you start using Team Foundation Server. That's when we start lighting stuff up. We're quite respectful of the Eclipse environment and also of other platforms, as you'll see in a second. So I'll go in here and I do team, and I'm going to say share project. So and that's the Eclipse convention for taking your project and sharing it in a version control tool. So I can pick my server, so I'm going to share it with Team Foundation Server, and I'm going to log in to my 2010 server once my VM wakes up, assuming I remember to switch it on. There we go. So and I'm going to get the project legend. Who's here used Team Foundation Server in Visual Studio? Okay. Who here recognizes this as quite familiar UI to them? That's deliberate, you know. We want to minimize training. It is just the same experience. It's just in Eclipse. So it's Eclipsey where it means to be, and Mackie where it needs to be on the Mac, and on Windows it just looks like Windows. So I'm going to log in here, go in, I'm going to pick my TFS workspace in a second. It'll be a bit faster than that. Let me just go in and just check. I just wanted to make sure I got a nice empty one. Notice, you know, already I'm doing quite a lot of things. Like, here's all my workspace listing. I could go add a new workspace if I wanted to. I could edit it. I could do whatever I need, you know. So let's go through. And then we're going to share this into TFS. So the next thing I want to do is pick my version control path where I'd like to share it. So I'm going to share it in main, in the Java folder, and I'm going to share billing service there. Next. Yep, I'm sure. Hit finish. And that's going to go do all the stuff it needs to do. I want to hit the finish button. Sorry. A spinning beach ball. That's going to go check all that code in to Team Foundation server. Notice I'm actually running the TFS server locally here because I never trust the internet when I'm doing demos. So I've got it running on a little VM on my Mac here. So apologies if it, well, it's just waking up. The hosted service is a lot faster than this, I hasten to add. But luckily, the local works for getting rid of the read-only bit feature we added works really good for offline stuff. So I was doing a demo a couple of weeks ago where I decided to be brave and demo against hosted live on stage. And then the conference Wi-Fi, as it is, went broke on me as I was doing it. And but yeah, it's great because you can still work offline really well in local workspaces. I carried on, did the demo, and nobody really noticed. Wow, that's being awfully slow. Let me just check something. Let me just check. Everything's okay over here. Yeah, the machine's been slow. You see why it's been slow? That's what time my computer and my body thinks it is. So, okay, let's try it. Okay, there we go. Right, it's added the stuff in. So you can see down here, it's again, you recognize this? Here's your pending changes view. Here's all the files. Now, TFS has that two-phase commit thing, so they're not actually shared until we add them. So initial check-in, we'll hit check-in, and then there we go. You know, we are Microsoft, so we say, are you sure? But you can get rid of that if you want, and say, always check-in, yeah. So you can go back and change the preference, we're not stupid. So there we go. Now, what if you want Team Explorer? So you can just go up to here. Again, notice, the only thing we've done now is we've added this pending changes view for you. So you can get rid of that if you want, or you can hide it. We've got the workspace drop down, we've got shelving and unshelving. I mentioned cooperation between teams and communication between teams. It's all very well and good, but you've got to have a little bit of fun from time to time. So one of the things we like to do is sneak features into our versions of the clients that the other team haven't got in. Just as we call it coopetition. Just to kind of annoy them a little bit. So here's one we snuck in, which was undo unchanged pending changes. Which, you know, not a great name, done by a developer. But basically that was, if you were to come in here and say it was a common request we used to see on the forum. So if I did team, look at all those. First of all, under my team menu now I've got this hooked up to Team Foundation server. What are the options I now have available to me? You know, this is Team Foundation server, a full client to TFS. So I can check this out for edit, and then, yeah. And then maybe I've actually gone and I've working on this one. Check out for edit. Okay. Now, obviously, you know, we're IDE integration, so, you don't actually have to check out for edit. You can just say, hello, ALM Summit, and it'll check out the file for you. I'll then hit save. That's saved. I've done my unit test. I'll go back here again. I mentioned I used to have a proper job as a consultant, so I'll copy-paste. That was a button I used to use a lot as a consultant. Paste, there we go, save that. And then if I had to come in here and do undo, undone, pages, changes, whatever that's supposed to mean, undo, it removes the changes from my pending change list that didn't actually change. So there you go. I'm glad that's all clear. Oh, that scared me. Okay, right then. So what else do you want to do? I'm going to come in here and I'm going to go team show view other. Team show view other. Team Foundation server. Sneak peek or something in the head. There's Team Explorer. So again, this is Team Explorer. Now I've just got a basic instance running here, so it's just got work items and build showing. If I was talking to a full TFS instance with SharePoint and documents, I see SharePoint and documents there too. I can navigate to my project portal, I can do all that sort of stuff. So, but here we have, I'm just going to go into the Blue Yonder project. And look, here's all my queries. You know, this hopefully looks very familiar to anyone who's seen TFS before. I can go edit a query. Let's create a new query, new query. You know, it looks a little bit different, but it's all the same functionality. So, you know, where work item type equals, I know, product backlog item. And I'll do file, save as. So it's TFSy and Eclipsy at the same time, PBIs. Okay, there we go. So save that as my query. There it is. I can run the query. It's TFS, just in Eclipse, running on the Mac. Crazy. Okay. When we first did this, I mean, we've been doing this for like 6 years now, maybe even a bit longer. When we first did it, we used to just sit there, like, running queries and checking things in. It was like, wow, this works. That's amazing, you know. It's on the Mac. Now we kind of get a bit blasé about it. Okay, so we've got those three things checked out. Let's do some work. So we'll come in here. We'll actually create a new work item. So let's create a bug. A bug. I always say bug in a way that Americans can't actually understand. So a bug or something. And can you understand that one? No? Okay, never mind. One of these. A bug. Yeah, there we go. So, and we'll say... Hello world is in UK English. Maybe I spelled colour wrong, or favourite, or the way I say aluminium makes it laugh, or something like that. So let's fix that. We'll assign that to me, Martin Wu, and I can come in here. Now notice all of the layout and stuff that you have. Let's make this a bit bigger. All the layout and stuff that you have in Visual Studio, all the form layouts that you can control, all the customization you can do with your work item template, the same customizations show up in Eclipse, just like they show up in Web Access. You know, it's the same work item you're looking at. The only difference is the controls can look a bit different, like these are the Mac versions of tabs, you know, they're cool. So we try and be native on the platform that we're on, but have all the TFS functionality exposed. So there we go. We'll just, say aluminium. There we go. So save that. Command S, because I'm on the Mac. Okay, so bug 85. Great. So I've got a bug, got some stuff. Let's do... if I wanted to as well, of course, I could come in here. I could switch on some checking policies. So I've currently got the change set comments policy. Again, you've heard of co-opetition. This ship's in the box with Team Explorer everywhere. You'll be glad to know the change set comment policy. You don't have to add that yourself. And then you can also come in and maybe I want to associate with a work item or something like that. I'll just leave change set comments switched on. So if I went to go check in, you know, you get the whole, sorry, you haven't done your check-in comment and why haven't I done it? It's there. Okay, I'll go do it. Fix bug, we'll associate that work item, with, again, this is all the same UI, you know and love. Let's see, last week, there we go, that'll do. Super, so let's check in and we'll associate. Great, go flying over to Windows, let's have a quick look in version control, again, once it decides to paint. Main Java billing service, was it? Yeah, if I go in here, let's do a quick view history. There's the changes I did from Eclipse, including if I double click on them. You know, it's a single source of truth. Okay, that's being slow, so I'll just leave that, and I could do the same thing over here, obviously. Team view history. Okay. Super, and then I can do some stuff. Well, that's fine. Work items, source control, that's already good, Woody. What else can you do? Well, we can. The next thing you're going to want to do is do some building, probably. So let's come in here and we'll create a new build definition. This is where it starts to blow the Java team's minds now, when you sort of show them this. So we'll come in here. Oh, wake up, spinning beach ball. This is the equivalent of a little, you know, the blue circle thing on Windows. So. Come on. That serves me right for jumping over to Windows and doing something. Yeah, no, Windows is waiting. Okay, that's, there we go. Yeah, whatever. Right, back to here. Great. So, I'm going to create billing service CI. So, in the build definition, you tend to... you give your build definition name. It's good to give it a convention, like, say, it's a CI build. You give it a description. I often give a three-line description of who the build owner is. So Martin Wu, Microsoft.com, and then my phone number, 555-1234. That's a made-up phone number, in case you can't guess. Trigger, I'm going to make continuous integration. We support gated check-in fully. So everyone know gated check-in? You know, if you do a check-in... when you do the check-in, it says, whoa, no, sorry, you can't check in yet. I'm going to take those changes, shelve them, so that's take a copy of them, store them on the server, and then I'm going to take those changes, take them over to the build server, do a get latest of code, unshelve your changes into that code base, run the build you've defined, and I'm going to point it to an Ant project in a second, and then only if that passes, check in on your behalf. So, pretty neat. Let's do a continuous integration build first, just we'll not tempt fate. I then go and tell it what I want to build. So come down here, let's go build the Java project, billing service, okay, there you go, build defaults, tfs2010/drop/give it a useful name, fantastic. Right, I'm then going to, it uses the MS build based wizards. For those of you who are experts on team build, you might think, well, huh, why is it not using workflow? Reason is, it's a lot easier to edit XML from Eclipse. And so we try and keep a thin wrapper around the thing that the Java team know. The Java team know Ant. The Java team know Maven. They don't know workflow. They don't know MS Build particularly well. They'd rather not learn it. Let's just keep that a thin wrapper and then do most of the build logic in the thing that they know and that they're building. So it keeps them happy. You can obviously go edit it, and it's behind the scenes. It's actually creating an upgrade template build process using this bit of MS Build script that it generates. But you can also do your own if you want a fully workflow based build if you want to. So we'll hit finish. So I've just done an Ant build there. I could have done Maven, which is another common Java build thing. I'm going to queue a new build just to make sure I got it right. Yeah, again. It's quite hard to demo, really, because if you've seen it on Windows, it's the same. It just is on the Mac, which is quite cool. So there's it doing the build. We'll go over to here on Windows. I'm going to have to hit refresh because it's to get it to pick up the build. There we go. I go into here, look at my queued build. We can see the billing service project running. And then this is the crazy bit. You come in and let's watch the Ant build run from Visual Studio that's kicked off on the Mac. So that's cool. Right then. We'll watch that running for a moment. One of the things people always ask me, and I'm going to come back to this screen in a second just to show you when it's finished. Hopefully, I'll check it's all green first, of course, before I come back. One of the things people always ask me is, oh yeah, very good, but what can't you do? And there are some things where we have inequality. For example, in Eclipse is a feature called synchronize. Basically, you can right-click in Eclipse and say, team synchronize. And that's a thing that teams are used to in the Eclipse world, and it compares your local workspace with the server workspace and tells you what's different between the two. Quite a neat feature. Eclipse people like it. Visual Studio doesn't have an equivalent, but we have it in the TFS integration in Eclipse because Eclipse users like it. So we've got that there. What we don't have today is branch visualization in Eclipse. We started down that route. We realized the technology we wanted to do it in the Eclipse world. It didn't quite work right, so we've reset a bit on that, and we're going to do it a different way, but we will have it eventually, branch visualization. We found that's not actually a problem, because developers aren't using branch visualization. They're checking in, checking out, work items, builds. The branch visualization stuff tends to be done by the build managers and the branch the SCM managers. So we've actually found it wasn't as big as the deal as we thought we had, but professional pride kicks in every now and then, and so it's going to get done. Obviously, in the build stuff, we didn't give you the option of creating a .NET build from Eclipse, because that doesn't really make sense. And we don't put the Java build stuff in Visual Studio again. It doesn't really make sense to do that. You can install Eclipse and Visual Studio side by side. If you're somebody that needs to do both those things, fine. But we tend to keep them in the separate worlds. The biggest one, which actually isn't on this list, so I've just updated my deck, I've missed that side, is an administration functionality. So to administer the server, you still need to use the raft of administration tools we have, you know, like the administration console, and if you want to manage security permissions, anything that needs TFS or team project administrator rights, really, then that's kind of done in Visual Studio or in one of the admin tools. Again, because Eclipse developers and cross-platform developers aren't doing that every day, it's the administrators of the TFS server, so we just keep it in one place, so we only have to edit it in one place. But everything they need for development is there. Okay, and look at this, so with project compiled, we're even getting, we're even getting all the ant, you know, we're getting some ant warnings. If we click on that, we would get the ant log file of the build, something that they can understand. There's the project compiled, there's the project test results, so these are JUnit tests ran by Ant, kicked off by a build I did on the Mac, showing inside Visual Studio on Windows. A single source of truth. Thank you. And of course I can go, you know, look at the build report on the Mac as well if I wanted to, but that's going to be slow, so I'm just going to switch it off. Okay, right then, so back to here. So the next thing we want to talk about, and I'm going to do some VM jiggery pokery while we're while I'm trying to talk at the same time. Yeah. Oh, Team Explorer, that's brilliant. How do I get it? Marketing question. There is the URL, TE2010. Comes as standard, and we have the cal. Sorry, I'm just doing some stuff at the same time I shouldn't do. And then, okay. When you're adopting Team Foundation Server, the trick is, I've always found, to start with the bit that's painful. So the bit that's causing you most pain. And in teams with technology boundaries, that's often not, first of all, source control. Quite often it's the work items, having a single source of truth regarding where we are. So often people start with just adopting TFS for work item tracking. Problem is, you're not using TFS for its whole value there. And you get a lot of goodness by adding more stuff in, like adding source control and work item tracking. Now you get the traceability between work items and source. That's good. So if you can do that, you know, when you can do that, it's great. And then finally, build's great as well if you can get there, because it completes the feedback loop. You know, you're now seeing not only was the work done, but which build was it fixed in, that sort of thing. However, if you can't go the whole hog with, say, builds, I personally contributed the cruise control integration to TFS. We've got Maven integrations with TFS, Hudson, Jenkins, which again is a popular Java build server. All those systems can talk to Team Foundation Server as its source control repository. So you don't have to, it's not a big bang migration you have to do. You know, you can take baby steps and progress through if you want to. Again, I would also encourage people to, there is fear of the unknown and fear in change. So do a trial internally, see what they think. I can honestly say when people have got to a proof of concept, when they're, you know, if they're comparing standardizing on TFS versus standardizing on something else, I'm trying to think of an example where I've actually seen them not pick TFS, because the tooling is it's an on par experience everywhere, and that's just not the norm. Normally one's a lot better than the other, but with TFS it's very much parity. And then again there I mentioned about the integrations available for the Hudson and Cruise Control. Okay. So where are we going with Team Explorer Everywhere? Well, since 2005, TFS 2005, we've had a version of the Eclipse and cross-platform client available when we release TFS every time since we've been releasing TFS. So prove us on a record. Admittedly, before then, it was with a partner company called TeamPrize, who I used to work for, up until November 2009, so just over 2 years ago. November the 3rd, 2009 it was, when Microsoft bought TeamPrize and integrated the technology into the core Team Foundation Server team. And that's had a huge impact, actually, on the TFS itself, because the cross-platform problem is owned by Microsoft. Things like getting rid of the read-only bit. suddenly jumped up in priority because it's now TFS's problem, not this partner team's problem. Also, we'll show you, I'm going to show you execute bit support. So handling of, on Unix file systems, you know, you can set files as executable, which means you can run them. TFS, to support that previously, you had to have some file called TP attributes checked in alongside. It was a bit of a pain. It just works in TFS 11, and I'll show you that. And these are all features that we've added. We've also got an SDK for Java. So, and if anyone wants to see that, I can show you some examples of that later on. You just download it. It's freely redistributable inside, you know, inside your application. So if you have a Java application or some piece of stuff you use internally to track your processes that are written in Java, you can get that to talk to TFS just fine. The object model is very, very similar to the .NET object model, mainly because we copied a lot of it over when we did the port. So Reflector was a wonderful thing. I know, I used to work as a partner company. Okay, but I didn't say that again. Oh, I'm being recorded. Right then. Okay. So, wake up. What I'm trying to do now is, let's show you how much I'm struggling, is, no, I don't want to do that. I wanted to show you some of the 11 stuff. And then we'll do Q&A. So, I'm on, that's my 11 server. Oh, wake up for me, please. Okay, there we go. So, here we have, so somebody was asking me, what does the standalone experience look like for the Mac? Well, this is kind of what the standalone experience looks like. It's actually, you can download a version of Eclipse called the Eclipse Platform Runtime. It's just the shell of Eclipse with nothing else in it, no Java, no, you know, whatever. And that way, if you're doing some development and you don't want all the language tooling, if you just want to be in the console, but you want a nice GUI maybe to do some stuff, then you can have a standalone client and connect in and not have any of that garbage of, you know, Java in there if you're not needing it. So this is what it, and it just looks like the same thing. We've put all, you know, all the functionality in the plugin works when it's in standalone mode. This is the new, it's currently, we call it Team Navigator internally because we have both Team Explorer and Team Navigator at the moment. This is the new Team Explorer. Ooh, there we go. So that's there. You've all seen that. But what I wanted to do was show you the command line. Oh, yes. Here we go. This is what you need at 5:30 and a long day, is a nice black screen. So here's a folder I prepared earlier. Nothing in the folder. And if I go back to over onto here, you can see this is the path I'm at. I could actually just click on there if I wanted to, and it would open, he says, open up a Finder window, show me the folder. Folder's completely empty. So, and then I want to get the files into that folder, but I've already mapped it. So I can just come in here, and I can do tfget. The same command line operations you can do on Windows, we have the cross-platform command line, and it works cross-platform, hence the name. And it's the same syntax. You know, if I do tfhelp, you see it's quite richly functional. You know, there's a lot of commands there, a lot of help. And it's all the same stuff. Notice with on the Unix version, all these options here, we have them with a hyphen. That's because the slash character that you see in the help on Windows doesn't translate very well into the shell of Unix. But if you go over to your Windows system and do tf something and use a hyphen as an option instead of the slash, that still works as well, even on the Windows version. The scripts are completely portable between the two, and we just do it that way to make it easier on the, you know, we're respecting the operating system that we're on, but they still work across both. And you can still use slashes in Unix if you really want to, but you've often got to be careful to actually get that to translate through. So, there we go. Okay, so I did a tfget. If I do an ls now, ooh, look, I've got my files. But here's the magic bit. Ls minus la. Let's zoom in for everybody. So anyone remembering the days on Unix? Look, first of all, they've got the writable bit set. Crazy talk. I was going to get, I haven't checked out. I can write them all without doing anything. Next, look at that. We've got the execute bit set automatically as soon as I did the get. And there's no other, you know, magic files there or anything like that. So if I come in here and I do, .build.sh, you see, hello world. I told you I like hello world scripts. So there we go. And that could come in, and that could just, you know, I'm hardcore now. Let's come in here and we'll do file a.txt in vi, or vim, actually, but never mind. We'll edit that line there. There we go. I'll do tf status. And then check it. Now, interestingly, I could go and switch my server off at this point. It doesn't matter. It still would know that I've edited the file. And there we go. Look, it's I've edited the file. It just picked that up magically. Isn't that good? This is the magic bit. If I go into here, do vi file a. If I come in and I'm going to manually go back and get rid of the change I did. Do a TF status again. Oh, I've not quite done it right. There we go, one change. Let's do... was there a space after it? Oh, that's a rubbish demo, isn't it? TF... I know, I can't roll back. Let's just do a TF undo on file A. There you go. It's all the functionality you expect to find is in here. There we go, undoing edit file A. Let's do it again. Vi file A.txt. I'll come in here, and this is what I'll do this time. I'll get rid of, let's get rid of edit, escape, TF status. There we go, so it's edited. Let's go back, we'll edit file A again, come down here, we'll type edit back in, escape, there we go, TF status. Please work this time. Oh! What was I doing? Did I do capital E, did I? I think if this is right, then... Was it capital E, was it? R-E, I doubt it, let's find out. I'll tell you what I'll do. Let's jump into here. Let's quickly do a refresh. This is the standalone client I've got. I could do this actually in the command line client, but, what am I doing? Refresh, sorry. Let's right-click on here, do a compare. Server version, see what's different. Huh. Oh, that normally works, never mind. That was not a spectacularly good demo. Okay, what I'll do this time then, let's come in, and I'm going to notice the changes are coming up. I come in here and I could undo my change again from Eclipse if I wanted to, undo changes. I'll undo changes. Let's go back to the command line. Oh, it was working. I'm sure it was. I'm gonna figure this one out in a second. Right. So if I do a ls minus la, I come in here. You see, file B is just a regular file. TF status. Oops. TF status. Okay, no pen. That's the one I wanted to see a minute ago. No matching changes. There we are. Anyway, I'm gonna add the execute bit to file B. A plus X file B dot txt. Do tf. This is just us showing off now. Look at that. I've added the execute bit. I've automatically detected. I've added the execute bit onto that file. Even better, if I do a chmod a minus x on, say, build.sh, tf status. Here we go. It's detected I'm removing the execute bit. I can do tf check in. Now, remember, when I went in, and set the... There we go. Change sets checked in. Great. Brilliant. And then if I wanted to, I could actually go over here. This is a different server, isn't it? No, I'll not show you that. That's cool. What I do want to show, because somebody asked me in the quick 5 minutes, is these local workspaces, they really, really help with iOS development. So I can come in here and let's open up this little iOS project. So, is Xcode? Yeah, Xcode's bouncing away. Shiny. Oh, it's loading. Anyone want to guess what this application does? It's like, I'm going to hit play in a second. Come on. I'm gonna do a change here while I'm in it. I'm just gonna save that. Control S. Let's hit run. While that's running, let me just. I could do it in the UI, but just because I'm determined to see what's wrong here, let's just do. No, not quite yet. CD demo slash. There we go. Move me. I do TF status on here, and it's going to show me which files are different in my, you know, in my local workspace. From there, look, it's the iOS equivalent of Hello World. This one's better because you can double click, you can double tap on it. He says, "Look, you can change languages. That's cool." Again, and because it's iOS, you know, you can do even move things around again. There you go, brilliant. There we are. Right, fantastic. And also, if I come back here, look, and there are the files that changed by doing that. And I could just go in, do TF check-in, and it just works. It just works. Okay. So, we've 5 minutes to go. That's actually surprisingly well timed for me. Any questions? Yes, sir. Okay, so the question was, if you've customised your work item controls and your check-in policies, how does that work? Because anyone who's done that knows that the .NET ones are written in .NET. Actually, we configure them separately. So with work items, you can do two things, just to explain to the whole audience. You can customise the layouts, and you can customise fields and all that sort of stuff. And you do quite complicated stuff without... And you just do it in XML, that just works. You can also do custom controls to put your own display control in there. You have to write a Java version of those, and you deploy them as an Eclipse plugin, and it works, and we provide the SDK has examples of how to do those. And the check-in policies are interesting because you actually have to... that's not currently in. That's not currently enabled in this new team now. So let me bring up the old Team Explorer for now. You have to separately enable your check-in policies here for the Java team. Once you do this, it applies to the whole of everywhere that Team Explorer everywhere is working. It applies. But you have to enable it separately for that team to the .NET team. Switching one on one place doesn't switch it on in both places. So let me do that quickly. And then if I go here and do the TF check-in this time, it'll actually give me a warning saying, but you haven't done a comment, hopefully. There you go. Please provide some comments. So you can come in here and you can say TF check-in, comment, colon, Xcode, test. Okay. Does that answer your question? Fantastic. Any more questions? Yes, sir.
Is this Team Explorer everywhere available now?
Yes. Yeah, Karen, sorry.
No, that's okay. And if I have clients today who have TFS 2010 and they want to use it with their extension and everything, is that the product they need to get in order to do that?
So the question is Team Explorer everywhere available now? And is this the product they want if they want to talk to TFS 2010 from Eclipse? Yes to both. There's how you get it, and give it a try. It also works, the 2010 version also works against TFS 2008 and TFS 2005. This version does not work against the TFS hosted preview, which is based on TFS 11. You need to download, we've got it available, I haven't got a link here, the Team Explorer Everywhere 11 version, and that allows you to authenticate with hosted preview and everything else. But that actually works all the way back as well in versions. Okay? Mike? So the question was, which particular power tools are you thinking about? So, are you meaning just checking policies and things, or like all the fancy stuff like work item templates and stuff? Okay. So currently there aren't, the question was what about power tools? We have some Visual Studio power tools. We have the build extensions power tools, which are just available, you know, to currently just really enable Java builds. We have a MISCCI plugin, MSSCCI plugin for older IDEs. And we also have Windows shell extensions type stuff, you know, so you can do it from Windows File Explorer. We don't currently have Team Explorer Everywhere power tools, so like work item templates and the alerts editor, things like that. Stay tuned on that one. I have nothing to announce at this time as it's being recorded, but by the time this recording's available, we'll maybe have, I don't know, we'll see. Okay, I'm terrible. Right, any more questions? Yes, sir. You have a proper job.
Yeah, they have the Eclipse environment. We have the PE installed, but they also have some Xcode developers who want to connect. Is my only choice to work in the kind of Eclipse lightweight client?
Yeah. Yeah. So the question was, Xcode is the only choice, the Eclipse lightweight client? Sadly, we would love to do a built-in integration into Xcode. Apple don't allow it. Please, everybody, go and file a bug with Apple to get them to enable third-party plugins into Xcode. I would love to. They don't allow it. So currently, the only option today is to have a separate, standalone, you know, client. We often find the Xcode people actually prefer the command line rather than having the UI. They find that faster. A combination of the command line and, say, web access is quite a good combination. But a standalone UI works as well. And some customers go as far as to, you have things called automator actions on the Mac. Some customers go as far as having their own automator actions to do check-in, check-out, that sort of thing. It's not built-in IDE integration, which is what I would love, but it's the same as what every other version control does that isn't built into Xcode. Yes, sir?
What about integrating in with Mono?
The question was, what about integrating in with Mono Develop? The last time I checked, there was a separate project called TF for Mono, which was doing that, which was an open source project. We don't currently integrate into Mono Develop ourselves. Between all the versions of Eclipse and Visual Studio, we've captured about 80-odd% of the built-in IDE market, and there are lots of other IDEs. We try and work with the providers of those IDEs to do their own integrations, and that's one of the reasons why we have the TFS SDK for Java and make it freely redistributable so that people with IDEs like that can plug into it just fine if they want to. Fantastic. Oh, another question. If people want to go get the fleeces, you know, don't worry about all the questions. We'll take two more questions, but yeah, you know, don't bide well me. So yes, sir.